Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Maddie B. Football is back. Not a lot of real good games going on. I did notice that they had like the whole, Notre Dame's in Ireland type thing. And I realized, like, if I was there, I might be the most attractive person in this entire stadium, Matt. I was very disappointed in, like, the eye candy they rolled out for Notre Dame fans. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is giving Irish people a bad look. I should go there. And I would be, like, if you don't have the live show, you have to take my word for it. But if you want to sign up, you can go to southboundsports.com and go to the Patreon to check out the videos. But I was very disappointed in like the NBC production and stuff, because it was like they're only finding like old people. And I thought maybe that's the only people that go to make this trip to watch the game. It didn't look like there were any locals there. Just all old Notre Dame fans. I thought, what's the difference between Indiana and here? Right? I was like, and of course it was Navy. So Navy's been giving them like trouble sometimes. But lately, I think Notre Dame has just been killing them. Maybe I'm wrong. I can't remember what last year's game was, but they showed the one highlight. Like, oh, last time they're here, they beat them 50-10. Today it was 42-3. I thought, well, yeah, well, no wonder no Irish people are showing up. You only have people from Indiana there. very disappointed with that being the only big time game. I am corrected. Florida State's rival Jacksonville State got a win today over UTEP. So I know you're probably keeping your eye on that. For those that don't know, Florida State is 2-2 all time against Jacksonville State. Definitely rival material, I think, when you only win 50% of the games. Right, Matt?
They want no part of it this year.
And then I think my boy Brady Hoke's still the coach at San Diego State. They're playing right now. They're up. And USC is tied with San Jose State. And it makes me laugh because it's on the Pac-12 network. How do you get the Pac-12 network? I don't know. I didn't even know it still existed, to be honest. We've been talking about the TV deals, and it's almost like a Pac-12 After Dark, except it's already started. And I'm going to keep my eye on this because everyone has hyped up USC as like the sleeper national championship team. And I'll be honest, if you lose to San Jose State, I don't think you can back into the playoffs. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think unless you're Big Ten or SEC, you're not backing into the playoffs.
Even with the loss to them, though, I don't think you back in. Like, remember Georgia was close with a team like this last year? And it's still early. It's the second quarter. They're just tied 7-7. San Jose State is getting the ball back. I'm not saying that USC is not going to pull away in the second half, and teams come out sluggish early in the year, but you're at home, and you're not playing a Power 5 opponent. Like, people will always bring up back when Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech and won the Natty. Virginia Tech's in the ACC. As much as I pick on the ACC, that's still a power conference. Virginia Tech has played for a Natty. San Jose State hasn't even played in, what, a big New Year's Six Bowl or whatever they call them?
Yeah.
So I'm watching that, and I'm thinking, you can't lose this game. Even if you run the table, I find it very hard to forgive this loss, because if you look at, like, a team... Heck, like last year when they had Ohio State and Michigan, both with like one loss, if they would both have two losses to like, oh yeah, Michigan lost to Ohio State and Penn State. Well, we really got to put USC in over them because they lost to San Jose State. It's going to be like, do we? Like maybe, let's say Notre Dame goes like whatever, because the most likely scenario is going to be Ohio State. So like if Ohio State loses to Notre Dame and Michigan, and then you would have a team like USC coming from another conference. I find it hard to believe that you'd bump them ahead. Maybe there wouldn't even be a discussion because like Notre Dame would just take that spot if they run the table in that scenario. I don't know. It's just early for me for the teams. And I know there's not that many games, so it's not a lot for us to talk about. But for teams that lose early, I think you still have to lose to a better team. I mean, we had the same thing with Pitt when they lost to Western Michigan, right? If they would have won, I think they lost one other game that year, but if they would have won the rest of their games, I really don't think they would have been able to get in with that loss. So have your team ready to play early in the year, because you don't want a loss like this to come back and haunt you. And so It's crazy. But not a lot of big games. I feel like there's always been one or two big matchups. The only other one that's like including a Power 5 team is Vanderbilt playing Hawaii tonight, which I keep seeing the lies about how you can't do travel. What was the thing I saw? Something about the ACC where they were saying that it's impossible for Stanford to travel all of their sports or something for less than $2 million a year. But the Hawaii one, I think Stanford has more sports teams, but like Hawaii was doing it for $500,000. So in reality, yes, you can. Like, what are you talking about? Especially in the ACC, because the ACC is not like these other conferences where, and I think it kind of hurts them compared to the SEC and Big Ten, where those two conferences have college towns. The ACC has a lot of cities. And with big cities comes big airports, Matt. Boston, Miami. Like, right?
Yeah.
Even like Tallahassee, state capital, Raleigh. Clemson's kind of off. That's probably one. Pittsburgh. Like, even if you go to West Virginia, people go to Pittsburgh. So, like, you're joining the city conference. So, with that coming in, you can fly right in there. I mean, heck, even like the Raleigh-Durham, like, you're landing right beside Duke, UNC, and NC State. You're in the middle. So, like, you can go to any of them. I think they say, like, what, they're like 13 miles apart or something. So, like, for Stanford to come in, depending on how the schedule's worked out, for the most part, you're going to be in big-time cities that you can fly to. Hawaii really doesn't have that luxury, and they're able to make it work. So you can't tell me that if Stanford really wanted to join the ACC. Now, there were some rumors that only SMU now is willing to take the no TV contract pay that we talked about, I think it was last week. So that's going to be a big deciding factor, because I thought that the initial read was Stanford and SMU were both going to come in and take it. And it seems like Stanford is kind of hesitating and they want to bring Cal with them too, which I don't know how that's going to work. Because you're going to have a, what do they have right now? 14 in that conference? You're going to go to like 17? I mean, the rest of the sports, like basketball with 18, like that, you can make that schedule work. Play everybody once. How many conference games do you normally get 18 anyway? Like, play everybody once and a rival twice if you really wanted to. But for football, Notre Dame's not in your conference. So, like, them voting all these other schools in is weird. Unless you're able to, like, pull in a school. Because at that point, honestly, if you're going to do that and Notre Dame's not going to fully join, I wish the ACC would pull the wild card out and just add, like, Boise State for football only. To, like, give them one more Western team. And to kind of even things up. I mean, 18's not a good number for pods, so it kind of, like, screws with travel anyway, right? But in the long term, if you're thinking, well, we're going to have to match what the Big Ten and SEC go to, so if they end up going to 24, then if we add Boise State now, we can have maybe a Western pod, because you could eventually add Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, Stanford, SMU, and Boise State, and have that be your Western 16 pod, which wouldn't be bad for the ACC compared to other conferences. I mean, honestly, like, you're going to be competing with the Big 12 most likely. That's not a bad conference to compete against, right? Especially like if Miami doesn't leave and Clemson doesn't leave. Because, like, realistically, I think Florida State's the only attractive team that can kind of name its place. The other ones I'm kind of, like, not sure on. For the reasons I mentioned, like, Clemson's not a big market. They're not, like, a big money school. They don't have, like, a... They're not, like, the big time, you know? So, like, for them to come in and be like, oh, SEC, we're going to take over, a lot of those other schools, I think, are just going to laugh. The Big Ten's going to say, like, yeah, you don't really fit with us. Like, what are you doing to increase, like, your brand to fit in the Big Ten? And they're going to be like, oh, well, winning a couple natties. So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing how some of these teams do today, because like you said, well, I don't know if you actually said it, but you most talk about Florida State being the team in the ACC this year. Clemson has been on top. If they lose that throne, it's a very bad time to lose it.
Yes.
Because now it's for all the money. It's the same thing that happened to East Carolina. East Carolina was on top of the world. Skip Holtz leaves, and like both careers cratered. Right? Didn't he go to like South Florida or something?
Yep.
And so it's like, well, you were the most attractive team. People were talking about adding you to the ACC, possibly the SEC to get into the North Carolina market. This is back when TV deals were big. They took Missouri instead. And that's because East Carolina fell off like 3 years before and became nothing. And then they weren't even going to be invited into like the AAC, I think at first. And then, I mean, like Cincinnati and them left them behind, UCF. They all kind of just stayed where they were, and East Carolina is basically gone. And everyone that's telling me, that's not going to happen to Clemson, they've won a couple national championships, I'm like, but what do they bring outside of that? If they're not winning football, what are they bringing in? Like, I mean, they're not enough to be a doormat. Like, where the Big Ten can look at Rutgers and Maryland and say, we're bringing you in for markets and other, and like other brand, like academics or whatever. People are going to hate it. They're going to say that like they should kick you out of the conference, but you provide a service. Like, you're good enough to beat other teams. Maryland was 2-0 against Texas a couple years ago when Texas was back, remember? So you can't be like, well, the Big Ten sucks because like Michigan's beating up on Maryland again this week. It's like, you but Maryland beat Texas twice. So that really killed the narrative. And if you notice, since that has happened, even like recently, ESPN doesn't take shots at Maryland anymore. They're realistically down to just taking shots at Rutgers. Because it's hard to take shots at a team that, even though they're losing in the Big Ten, is beating teams at home and on the road that are like leading the other conferences, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, that's what you need to do. If you're like, that's what I think they're looking for in the next round of expansions. Like, the Big Ten's looking at Oregon and saying like, well, it might not work out. Like, your players might not be able to recruit as well. Your team might not be as good, but what we really want from you is to come in with lesser money right now and win out of conference. We hope Nebraska would do it. They didn't. And they've been kind of wandering the desert.
But I think there's a possibility that they potentially could start to rebuild. It just, I feel like there's, Florida State caught a wave at the absolute right time, and Norvell was smart enough to be able to capitalize on how to structure the transfer portal and the NILs. And I feel like he had to have been researching like how to make this work, because he was one of the people that's so far ahead of the curve that it cracks me up to see how Miami and Florida fans try to crack on him about it, because he just has Florida State in such a better position. Had this have been pre-NIL, pre-transfer portal, it probably would have taken him a decade to get the pieces in place to win consistently to attract the higher tier level prospects. But through the portal, they were able to pull all these higher ranked guys that flipped the roster, that then they were able to compete more, which is now setting themselves up where they're having a ton of 5-star and 4-star recruits committing. And I think it's just going to make them that much more competitive, because I think the game in this is, you're winning enough that you're in the running for, you know, the top 150 recruits, and to be able to bring in those high profile guys really changes the dynamics for you. When you don't have that, I think you end up relying on trick plays, on luck, on what have you, to keep yourself competitive in games. And I just think you got to give Norvell credit for being on top of it, because where he's taken advantage of it, I feel like Dabo was one of the coaches that was on the other side of it, where now it's leveling the playing field, and instead of taking advantage of it, he kind of has just complained about it and now is being left behind.
Yeah, that's where I think some teams, they're able to do one very well. Like, remember Michigan State had all those transfers like the very first year and they won like 11 games. And then you don't recruit, like you have to kind of find a balance.
Yes.
Because like they didn't recruit to backfill. And then the next year, they didn't get the same type of transfers. And so it's hard to find that. And I think now you're seeing teams like Clemson where they, it doesn't seem like they're doing the same strategy in terms of like the transfer portal. And now they're all relying on like, well, we hope this new QB is going to be a stud because we really need him to be. But teams like Tennessee are kind of doing it. And I'm kind of surprised on how fast they were able to do it. I mean, even with like players like Joe Milton, Michigan's old quarterback that kind of flamed out in the middle of that COVID year. And it was almost looking like there's no way he's going to be a starter anywhere, right? Because he just seemed like he was so inaccurate after that first game. And now look, they're like predicted to go maybe take another run. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen. Just because I think some of it's going to be player fit. And if the NIL stuff kind of gets away from them, maybe the NCAA will kind of come in and say, hey, we're going to put regulations here and try to limit it. But I still think you need a balance of both. You can't just rely on the transfer portal because we've seen that fail so many times. And if you're just sticking with recruiting, sure, you can land 30 recruiting, like recruit classes, but like Michigan did that when Harbaugh came in and they had like what, a couple of guys get drafted every year near the top. They just didn't have the depth. So you need to get guys either through the transfer portal for that depth, which it seems like the balance that Michigan's found, taking starters that are graduate school players that are older and bringing them in. It's kind of like the NFL bringing in like a bunch of veterans, right, to a young team. And I think that's a good way to kind of approach the portal. Because you're not like relying on like, well, we need this heavy hitter coming in. Because we kind of already have them.
And once you have some of those players selected, being able to go in the portal and bring some additional talent in helps. So that you're still... Because I think that's one of the things that's hurting these teams is you rely too heavily on transfers, and then the recruits are like, "Well, I'm not gonna go there because they're gonna bring somebody in and take my playing time." And if you have too many of the recruits coming in, then some of the transfers look like, "Well, they're just looking at developing people. I may get buried in this." So it's having that balance of like knowing where your holes are and then being selective with who you're attacking in the portal to be able to say, okay, if I have an issue at left tackle, I need to make sure that I'm going after the top tier people to fill that need so that we can be competitive now. And then by doing so, we win the games that now we're in the running for these players to be able to build the long-term depth.
Well, speaking of long-term depth, there's an article that came out today about Kirkpatrick Jr. choosing Alabama. And the timeline's kind of a little weird on this one, Matt, because his dad played for Saban a mere 14 years ago. So it's almost like the old adage of bringing in older guys that are already dads and having families. Or like... the joke, it's like at the high school level where they're like, yeah, that guy, he drove in here with his four kids and his wife. They're sitting down there. They're like so big. But in reality, that has to be true. Because how the hell else is he 18 years old if he played 14 years ago? Unless he's recruiting him super young. This doesn't tell me exactly when he's going to sign. But the timing is a little iffy here. If Nick Saban was relying on his... a bunch of family men playing for him at Alabama to have kids around the same time so he can keep his dynasty going. Maybe he lucked out. We'll see what happens. That's why you got to be bold and say, like, tell the boosters, like, guys, we have a plan in place. I have a bunch of kids that are, or a bunch of players that are having kids, and they're going to be here in 18 years. We'll be able to sign them back up. Keep the cycle going. You got to keep me around, because like Joe Paterno coached forever. So like, he's like, what, coaching like grandkids of people that he coached, right? He had to have. Same with like Bobby Bowden. I'm assuming like they at least had one guy. If Nick Saban's barely been there for that long, it seems, and he's already having children, you got to assume that some of those other ones had grandchildren. But that's probably going to be a thing that doesn't really happen anymore, I would think. Maybe like Dabo. I don't know how old he is. I feel like a lot of these guys are getting like super old. You would have said Fitzpatrick at Northwestern, or Pat Fitzgerald, I mean, but he's gone, right?
So, yeah, he's gone.
And their players were still wearing shirts for him and all kind of stuff. So I'm wondering how their season is going to fall apart. It feels like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
USC scored, so they're up 14-7. Great first season. Michigan's playing ECU at noon on Peacock. And the one thing that cracks me up with this is that down here in the South, I have a lot of people that went to ECU. So it always catches me off guard when people are like, "Hey, I see you had a Michigan shirt on, or a Michigan like thing on your car, or like your Michigan flag up. Like, hey, you want to give me like, where should I eat if I go to Michigan?" I'm like, "Buddy, I don't know what the hell. I don't even know you. How am I supposed to know what you like to eat? How am I supposed to give you a recommendation?" Why should I start telling them Little Caesars? Or White Castle.
Go to Golden Corral. There's something there. If you don't like anything in Golden Corral, then you are a picky eater.
Like, oh, yeah, you've never been out of state? Like, do you not know that they have the same restaurants pretty much? I mean, I know they're talking about getting stuff on campus, but it always catches me off guard because it's like you're struggling, like doing other things. Like, one guy's like dropping off a package. Like, starts chatting me up. I'm like, "Buddy, don't you have a timer going? Get out of here. I'm doing yard work. I don't need to be talking about what's going on, you know?" So that'll be interesting. I wish, now if Michigan was bold, they could have did like a twofer where they had two home games and one away, and then they could have played at East Carolina. Then I would have went down there and I could have did the same thing. Like, "Hey guys, where should I eat here? You have a think place called Bojangles? That's what I like to eat on the other side of the state. Please, like, come give me some tips." So that's the one thing that kind of annoyed me. But I'm ready for football to start, just because people are always like, "Hey, take it easy on." That's another thing I get. "Hey, take it easy on us." Like I'm the one calling plays. Like, they want me to tweet Harbaugh and say, "You're not even coaching, right, Coach? But can you take it easy on these guys? I work with a lot of them, you know." They want me to take it easy on them. But did you see the Harbaugh situation? I guess I should fill people in. So they this is a little bit of rumors anyway, but the rumors are that what happened is the receipt that I talked about came from an old like recruiting coordinator. He like does stuff at Mississippi State. So he like told the NCAA to look into it a little bit more, which seems odd, right? Because like, you're the guy, why would you burn that bridge? But that's the reason why like there might be more to it. Because like, I guess the stuff that hasn't been released, right, might be more like insider type knowledge. So I'm assuming that Michigan has that information. Right, because I don't know why they would write a response up if they didn't. So they went ahead and they responded. And from there, the NCAA came back and said, like, "This is what's going to happen, probably a 4-game suspension or whatever penalties." Michigan said, like, "We'll typically get a 4-game suspension." The panel denied it. Matt, a little bit crazier, the guy that denied it is the same exact guy. And this could be rumors, but this is what I was told. Is the same exact guy that he's on the board for the NCAA now. He used to be in the Vikings front office, and he was like one of the guys that was the final vote against Harbaugh to not get that job. So it seems like it's one guy that has a personal vendetta against Harbaugh. And he's like just following him around. Like, hey, you want a job with the Vikings? I'll stop that. Oh, NCAA trouble? Let me just join this board here. And let me just come after you and see what's going on. And so I'm always like ready to like a little bit skeptical when I'm reading some of these things, you know. But Michigan came back with a 3-game suspension because they're doing it in-house. They're not waiting for the NCAA anymore. Their hope is that next year, if the NCAA says, well, you're supposed to give them 4 games like we initially agreed on, and we know that it was like a weird thing, we're going to come back and like let you do that or whatever. So they're thinking that in the end, if the NCAA says you have to do a 4-game suspension, they'll just accept these 3 games and tack one on at the beginning of next year, which kind of surprised me because I was always under the assumption that if Michigan, I mean, obviously the goal every year is kind of to win the Big Ten and then Harbaugh set a national championship. But I was under the impression that like the way the roster stacked up right now is this is Michigan's best chance for a natty. So if they win one, Harbaugh should just go to the NFL, or I mean, whether they win one or not, you know. And maybe, because like there's rumors that maybe JJ could come back next year and then you'd have a long-term starter. So maybe that would be enough to kind of bridge the gap for Harbaugh. But now it's seeming like he's ready to go. And one of the things that came out was like Michigan plays Texas, I think, game 2. So they only did the 3-game plus 1 planning for the 4th-game suspension. They didn't want to do 2. And then have them tack 2-1 and then him potentially miss that Texas game next year. Now, if the NCAA comes back and says 5 games, then it will be interesting to see what happens, right? If they don't make the playoffs, does he just not go to the bowl game? But some are saying that because of this impasse that they're having, that they might not make a decision until next summer. Which is crazy to me, right?
Yeah.
You're having the cloud hang over your program's head and just some of the stuff that's happening. I'm kind of like annoyed with how the athletic department kind of handled it. I understand now that if it was a former staffer that kind of came on and made that decision or whatever, that, okay, I understand why the NCAA came through and like how they're really hounding him and how Michigan can't just be like, oh, we gave you the receipt, we're writing it off. You know, if he gave them more information, it's going to be a little bit harder for them to ignore the warning or whatever, but we'll see what happens. I don't really like the NCAA. I don't like how like Tennessee, they're like, hey, we admitted it, but we don't want to punish the current guys. If Harbaugh punishes himself, I really don't see how the NCAA can like take away wins, you know, or do other things if it's something like as simple as the recruiting cheeseburger thing. Unless there's really more. But like I've said before, at this point, if there was more, I feel like we would have heard about it, right? Don't you think?
I don't know. I mean, I like to think that in a lot of these situations, it's somebody being petty and just tattling, you know, whether they got fired, they moved on, and now they're feeling spiteful, and they're bringing this stuff up to try to get somebody else in trouble, you know. But with a lot of these stories, I feel like because it's Harbaugh we're talking about, everyone wants to assume the worst and throw the book at him, and now it's creating the issue that I have with it is it went from he's 4 games suspended or 6 games suspended to no, I'm not going to do it at all to, well, maybe just 3 games. And it's like, it's this public battle that is just airing these discrepancies within the NCAA. And what drives me crazy with it is that what should be a pretty straightforward policy of just having standards and ways of handling this, it's like they just shoot from the hip and then see, well, let's try this and then see, we'll throw this punishment out and see how everyone reacts. And realistically, they probably already have something in mind. But it's like, we'll do two or three different ones, and then by the time we actually do this, the suspension, it'll just be like two games, and nobody will even care because we've run the story for so long.
I'm going to get probably audited for saying this, but it's kind of like the IRS, right? Because they know how much you're supposed to pay. And with today's technology, why don't they just automatically have taxes happen? Right? But instead, they'll still send you a letter that'll be like, hey, buddy, you're $500 short on this thing. It's like, why cut out the middleman? Like the HR blocks and whatever. That's like what the NCAA is right now, where they're like, well, we're going to have a board. And that's what cracks me up. It's like, well, we have this guy from the Vikings that seems to be voting to like for the NCAA to approve it because he was supposed to, I don't know, that he was supposedly the deciding vote to not accept the penalty that Michigan had for four games for Harbaugh. And then the NCAA got written like drug through the mud after that decision by like local newspapers and even like the national media. So that one guy made everyone laugh at the NCAA for a few weeks. And I feel like really weakened the NCAA's case against Michigan so much that they had to break their own rule and commented like, there's more to this. And then Harbaugh was even saying like, well, there's nothing bad in this report. So I don't know what they're hinting at. I wish they would just tell everything that came out of it. And so it's like, all right, well, what do you want to do? Put it out there. What's the bad part? I mean, like Michigan has to know what's in it. Harbaugh already commented and said there's nothing bad in it. So I don't think he would do that because why would you put a target on your back, right? Maybe he knows that the public perception's on his side right now and he's going to roll with it. But maybe he's crazy enough, like you said, you don't know what he's going to do. Maybe he would just go to the NFL anyway. like Chip Kelly, didn't he do that? Heck, Pete Carroll did the same thing, didn't he? That'd be really funny if Harbaugh's career really took off because of the... didn't Pete Carroll come across the field and say, what's your deal to him after he ran the score up when he was at Stanford? And he's like, oh, shucks. It'd be funny if Harbaugh like did the same exact career path as Pete Carroll, where he's like in the NFL, he comes to college, wins a natty, comes back to the NFL and wins the Super Bowl after like getting the NCAA after him. That would be kind of funny, I think. Because I think, I don't know what the ages are, but I feel like they would have to be around the same time frame because Pete Carroll's pretty old. Yeah, Harbaugh just doesn't have a college rival, like a young up-and-coming coach that rivals him like that, you know? From like a, it would be like if Northwestern's new coach beat Michigan and ran the score up on us and Harbaugh and him had a beef. That's basically what Stanford was to USC, I think, right? Because Stanford was like no wins at all when Harbaugh got there, or like two wins or something. But I think that's all I kind of have for college. I think those are the main things that I had written down. You have anything else for college you want to talk about?
One of the only things is it doesn't ping heavily on anyone's radar, but I did see that they had a court date set for Nick Rolovich. And it reminded me because of Hawaii play-in, where he had coached previously and now former run-and-shoot quarterback Timmy Chang's the head coach here now. But they have a court date set for December 9th because of Rolovich suing Washington State University because when they fired him in 2021 because of his vaccination status, he tried to apply for a religious exemption with the Human Resources Department, and they wouldn't accept it. And so he's going on the offensive now and trying to sue the university for essentially firing them and getting them out of coaching. And so
I wonder what's going to happen, because like when Mike Leach sued, they just kept dragging it out so much that he died, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, the state has that much power, and it's a state university. Now, there have been some, like, COVID changes to where I think some workers are able to win those lawsuits now. But I wouldn't be surprised if they just kind of settled out of court or something. And we never hear about him coaching again, right? He's not coaching anywhere now, is he?
Well, there were, like, the governor and the Washington State Athletic Director that had, like, they were named in the case initially, and they were, the judge dismissed them from the suit, but there's still some charges against Washington State University altogether that are still possibly pending.
Oh, yeah?
So I want to just see how that's going to – I'm curious to see how that plays out in December, because hopefully he's able to get some kind of package for losing his job over his vaccination status.
Yeah, I keep hearing like more and more stuff like some of those restrictions might come back. And it kind of like worries me, like what would happen in terms of sports if they do something like that? And I don't know if it would be national, it'd probably be like state by state, depending on how many cases are going back up. But like, is that going to affect people, like teams? Like, you know, Michigan was hit hard by that because of the state restrictions.
It will 100% affect people the next time because of how poorly it was handled this time. And when you look at how fast they shut stuff down and the evidence that came out after the fact about people being sick and having other medical conditions as a result of getting the vaccines and boosters, I think there would be a major revolt. I would be surprised to see people willing to go back into this masking and distancing and everything else. I think the people that like found that paranoia comforting are probably still masking and distancing and doing all of that stuff. But to everyone else, it would absolutely blow my mind to see us back in another scenario where we're locked down. Cause I just think people would just rebel against it.
Yeah. I mean, sports are kind of just like an entertainment thing. I feel like if you want to go, you're going to go. Like, there are risks going anyway. Like, how many times do people fall off banisters or whatever? And it's kind of surprising to me that with all, like, the issues with the NFL, like, people getting drunk, now the Big Ten and, like, other states, like, Michigan State's going to sell alcohol now. I think Michigan's, like, one of the only ones that doesn't anymore. And it's like, oh, yeah, let's have a night game against our rivals, and you always hear rumors about like people getting hit with batteries and other things. It's like, oh yeah, that's where I want to go.
Well, maybe that'll work out better for you because then they'll be drunk and they won't be able to be accurately hitting you with batteries.
Oh, I know, because if they keep pricing you out, then it's going to be really hard to get drunk. You have to bring like $1,000 with you. Right? You're like, $30 for this beer? What are you doing? Because when I went to the bowl game, like last year, like getting the beers, as soon as I walked in, like the guy's like, hey, you want a beer? I'm like, yeah, sure. And it's like, oh yeah, it was like $13 and it's one bottle. It's like, okay. They pretend like it's a big bottle. They have like the higher ones, right? But it's like super skinny. So it's not like you look at it and you think like, oh, that's like a double, right? And then you look at the ounces, you're like, oh, it's just a regular. Just charged me $13 for it. Nice, buddy. Great work, Mr. Guy. Like, I wonder if they did they work on tips? Because, like, they had the tip thing. It's like, there's zero chance I'm tipping on a $13 beer at a stadium. Like, don't even ask me that. That's an insult, right? There's nowhere else in the world that the beer costs that much and you expect a tip. It's like the coffee shops now that, like, Starbucks has, like, the tip. It's like, there's no way that I would ever do that, right? So that's the one thing that I don't want at the stadiums either. Like, oh, you want to pay here $50 to park? Oh, you want to give me a $5 tip? It's like, hell no, get away from me. Man with the green suit on or whatever you have, the parking tag. That's like always my fear now of like going to games. It's like the bullshit with parking. Because you're like, how early do I have to go there? Are there going to be morons driving around clogging up all the lanes? Yes. Okay, how many morons do you think they're going to be? And then you're like, all right, am I going to be able to even get in? Because sometimes there's just random construction, right? So do I go here? I park and just walk. And then sometimes you're walking, and then there's, like, hero cops doing, like, traffic duty. And you're like, buddy, you're not taking traffic duty this seriously. Get a break. Because I've been yelled at crossing the street. It's like, hey, you can't have open beers out here, sir. Dump it out. It's like, come on, cop. Like, do you hate your life that bad that you're hounding people where they're selling beers 5 feet away and asking for tips on them on top of that? So you're going to make me dump this out and then go buy, spend $30 to get another one right over there. So not a good experience. They're talking about how attendance is down. That's why attendance is down. It's not a surprise. Like, you're better off setting up like a big TV or projector in your neighborhood and just watching it with your neighbors. You probably have the same like group experience as you would at the stadium. And the camera angles are much better. You can see exactly what's going on. Right? That's why sometimes they have them like at basketball stadiums, like when a college team like makes the playoffs or whatever. The students will go to the basketball arena and they'll have the game up on the Jumbotron. And it's like, that's basically the same thing, but you're probably going to be able to see better anyway. Because a lot of times at the stadium, people are just tuned and watching the big TV anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, I know, a little bit of a rant season coming up. Let's get in the NFL for the rest of the show. They did the roster cuts, and I think I told you before the show, maybe this is in the pre-show, but I keep getting alerts. It's like, oh, big-time veteran getting cut by so-and-so team. And I'm like, ooh, who? I click on it. Never heard of the guy in my life. Just because he played for 5 years doesn't mean he's a big-time veteran. There are tons of people drafted from teams that I don't know. It's like, I'm looking through the list. I had the entire list up today, should be up to date from CBS. And as I scroll through here, I wonder, like, do I know any of these people at all? Because I understand some of them are like rookies or whatever coming in. Like, you see some names, like on the Steelers, like not a lot of these like would really matter, if anything. Like, Philadelphia cut Ian Book, like he was the old Notre Dame quarterback, right? Did I really think he was going to be on the same level as Hurts? No. So am I surprised that they cut him? No. Some of the guys, it's like, oh yeah, here are some guys. Like, I'm trying to find ones that I might know. Like James Washington, the receiver for the Saints. That's not the same as the Steelers receiver, was it? Probably just another guy with the same name.
I might be the same one.
Let's take a look. Because like that would be one where it's like, all right, that might be an interesting one that you would cut. But because he was played for a while. Let's see what happens. No, he's with the Colts right now, it says. Oh, no, he was cut by the Saints. But then he was immediately signed by the Colts. So it's more just like a move. So it is the same one. I thought that might be. Which is weird because like they're updating this saying that he's cut. And then his own Wikipedia page is already updating that it's the Colts. I bet it was him that made that update. He's sitting at home. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll teach you guys a lesson. I'll update that.
Here's a source.
James Blackman. Remember him? He's cut from the Dolphins. DJ Turner. I feel like that name's similar, but it's a wide receiver. I think that was Michigan's own cornerback, so, and he'd be like a rookie, but I don't think it's him that got cut. Yeah, I mean, I don't really see any big-time names in terms of cuts. But we're at the point now where the funniest thing that I've seen, because this is probably boring podcasting at this point, but remember the 49ers traded up for a Michigan's kicker, right? He had an awful like beginning of preseason. Now he's hurt. And so their backup kicker, the 49ers, is also hurt. And now they might have to keep three kickers on the roster to start the year. Which is just hilarious, right? Because if he came out and he was hitting all his kicks, they wouldn't need the hurt backup kicker. They would just cut him, right? And then bring in another veteran kicker as like the starting backup. But now because they don't know what they wasted on with a pick like that, and I hope it's not a waste. I hope he kicks for like 50 years. But it's almost at the point where how do you know what you actually have on your team? Because you're not really going to go ahead and make some moves. I think Donovan Jeter was a Michigan defensive lineman. He got dropped by the Bears and picked up by the Giants. But yeah, I'm sure other people have, like, they know some guys on this list because of where they watched him play at college or their local team. But I honestly went through the entire list, and other than the couple, like, college people that I know, not a lot of big-time moves and or surprising cuts, I think, from this year. Was it Corey Davis that stepped away, though?
It might have been.
He was, like, the wide receiver. I think he was with the Titans for a while. They said it, he might have been with the Jets or whatever. But he stepped away, and he didn't even give a reason. He just stopped showing up. Yeah, he was with the Jets. But, like, how would you feel if you're signing with the Jets and then Aaron Rodgers brings a bunch of his buddies around? And guess what? You're not one of his buddies. So, like, he's just like, you know what? I'm just not going to show up and see what happens. And then they're like, oh, yeah, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm just probably going to retire. And so he just randomly retired. And I thought that was the most funniest thing I've seen. Because, like, that wouldn't that be, like, a weird move? I mean, it's almost like you're at a job, your boss quits, and then, like, a new boss comes and he brings a bunch of his, like, brothers in or something. And they're like, oh, yeah, you're still here. Who are you again? And it's, like, 3 weeks in. And you're like, well, I'm close enough to retirement. I'm just going to retire, guys. Let's just end it. This is awkward for all of us. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets have some injuries, if he just randomly comes back because they need him, right? He's only 28 years old. He was just excused for team activities for 10 days, and then he retired in the middle of preseason. So I hope mental health is all right with him, and there's not like a nagging injury either. Because sometimes you keep getting injured, and then it's like in your head, and you can't like go full speed because you're afraid of getting hurt. But I don't know. We got the draft coming up. Maybe going to try to do for fantasy. I mean, maybe going to try to do a live show. So I'll keep posted on our Twitter. Matt, you going to be a part of that this year?
I don't know. It depends on where I'm doing my drafting from. Cause I may be, I know we said it a little bit later, but because of my additional obligations of not just coaching, but also having game duties for our youth program, I may be still announcing the game for the one league while ours is starting.
So you're the announcer?
A little bit.
What do you mean? They have like a, they don't do it from the booth, do they?
Yeah.
Remember we used to announce like Little League?
Yes, that's exactly what it's like. That's literally what it's like.
Do they still have Doritos and cheese there for you?
If you want it, probably. But I'm trying to be on the health train, so I just bypass the concession stand.
I've seen announcers. What else are you going to do but eat up there?
I'm going to hydrate. I'm going to bring my water.
So that's a nice little thing you're adding. Man, you're really filling out the resume, doing all kinds of random stuff this year.
Well, that's because I didn't realize that when you sign up to coach, I kind of thought that was your duty.
You and must really want to get out of the house, bro.
Well, the greatest part was my wife was like, so do you have to announce the game? I was like, yeah. She goes, do I have any responsibilities? I was like, no. She's, well, that's all I care about then. Because they want each family is assigned some other game duty. So, like,
oh.
So there's parents that help during the, like, our game. And then when we finish our game, then we help with the minors game.
You should have told her it was a requirement.
Majors.
It was a requirement for her to be a groupie for the announcer. And bringing you stuff. That's what you need. You need someone up there giving you snacks, making sure you're pronouncing the kids' names right. Because now you also have to learn a bunch of names, dude.
Well, see, and that's actually helping because then there are kids in the pipeline that will be coming to me anyway.
Make sure you don't drop a swear by accident. Because that could happen. So you're announcing, you're coaching, and then you're also with the high school, too, which you guys won on Friday.
Yes. Big win.
So how many hours of practice are you with a day? Three? Four?
About that.
Oh, well, my gosh, dude.
The flag practice isn't all day.
Do I need to get a divorce lawyer on the call? I'll bring them in. I'll be like, this guy really doesn't want to be home.
Well, I mean, this is going to be a peek into my world. So on Monday, I'm going to have my regular work day, get out of work, and then drive back home for our JV game. Tuesday, I'll have varsity practice from like 3:20 to 5:20-ish, and then I'll have my flag practice like 5:30 or 6 to 7. Wednesday the same, Thursday the same, and then Friday's varsity game.
And before work, you wake up and go out with your dog for a walk or a run, right?
Well, I bypassed that this past week. So I'm hoping to get back on that train this week.
You know, I'm seeing a trend here where the next step is you just start living out of your car. And you're like, all right, kids, I'm ready for practice. And you just have a station wagon. And in the back of the station wagon is a net with just a bunch of footballs and stuff in it, cones. And you're like, just permanently wear a whistle.
Well, I did tell a couple kids, I was like, well, this is my house. And they're like, well, where do you sleep then? I point up in the press box. I was like, well, I sleep up there. Like, wow, he really does sleep. He really does. This really is his house.
And people in the neighborhood will soon believe it. They'll say, there's that guy. He's always here.
He's always here. There are even a couple parents that were like, wait, have you been here? I was like, yeah, I had varsity practice first. It's like, it's not clicking that I'm pulling double duty.
That's insane, dude. I have to tip my cap to you. I don't know how your wife handles it.
Well, she's been battle tested with it, because when we first moved to North Carolina, we didn't know any better. And then I didn't realize like the actual hours that we were keeping. I might as well have been working a college schedule, because we were doing our regular work schedules. And then I was practicing from 4 to whatever time. And then by the time practice was done and the parents actually got around to pick the kids up, I wasn't getting home until like 10:30, 11 o'clock. And I wasn't even thinking anything of it. It was just like, well, I guess this is just what we do right now.
That is insane.
And then when I went to the second school down there and we got out of practice, all the kids had left and I was driving home and driving past the school that I used to work at where they were still practicing. I was like, oh, that is not the standard practice time that everybody else is doing. And then when I moved back to Pennsylvania and I realized like even more like different and not as many hours of game planning and everything that went into it, was like, oh, this is completely different. She should have divorced me. She's nuts.
She's nuts for being like, he's still not practicing at 11 at night, is he?
She's just like, well, at first it was like, what is taking so long? And then after having me home for a couple of months, was like, hey, don't you have weightlifting or any kind of spring practice coming up? Like, what are you talking about? It's like, well, there's some shows I like watching when you're not here, so why don't you go ahead and go back to practice?
It's like a commercial where they show like the one guy running the bleachers. It's just you. waiting, pretending to wait for kids to get picked up. You're like, I don't need to go home yet. I'll just keep running. And you're like really jacked. Because like some coaches are like really jacked and you wonder like, how do they get like that with all these responsibilities? But maybe they're just spending too much time in the weight room and not really focusing on the other abilities.
Just beefing?
Because like, I mean, look at the Ryan brothers, right? Two successful bros, not in the best shape. John Madden, not in the best shape.
Although they did ride those tandem bikes together that one time.
He didn't have like a weird foot fetish thing. He had time for that to fit in. Didn't have time for the gym, though. Got to get your priorities straight. This episode will probably get us banned. Oh, man. I really don't have anything else to even get us more. I guess we're already kind of close to time. You have anything else you want to talk about?
No, just last thing. Just I was excited we got the first dub of the season back at the alma mater. And I was proud because last year we played at my old school. We played the same team, and it was just a different feeling, different atmosphere all around. Like before the game started, we got absolutely soaked. And I know that those were the things that when I was coaching last year, I would stress about because
from
it was
the
like,
heat or from a rain
from the rain.
Well, be clear, like, because like, I talked about people getting super sweaty, just standing there coaching. That could have been you.
Oh no. I train so that I don't sweat on game day. This was torrential downpour. We were soaked. It pounded rain for probably 10, 15 minutes and then stopped and didn't get another drop the rest of the game. But
that's pretty crazy.
But I was so worried because I thought, well, how are we going to respond? Like, is this going to be a, oh, now I'm all wet and now this doesn't feel right. And like, is it going to become like mess with us mentally? And the kids were like just whooping it up and just it was no factor. And it was a dedication night. The Conemaugh Valley dedicated their field to their old coach. And our kids were amped to play. And they're like, they may have gotten lightsaber, but we're gonna turn them out. So it was nice to see the competitiveness come out in them and to get that first win on the season.
I have one other question. How many pass plays did you call?
Four or five.
I was going to ask, could I count them in one hand?
Yes, you could use one hand, I do believe.
How many of them were screens? Four or five?
No. Every pass that there was a screen that I really wanted to call, but I was worried because we didn't really execute it well through the week. And I feel like if you can't successfully hit it during practice, you have no business calling it in the game.
Yeah, that's risky.
So I kept it in the bag just thinking we'll save it unless it's an absolute desperation that we can call timeout and make sure everyone is on the same page. But thankfully, I was kind of surprised with how they aligned to our offense because they took some things away, but they gave us some things that I was like, there's no way they're actually going to do this. And it played into our run game really well. So I just said, if they're going to give us the run, we're just going to keep hammering it until they stop us. And thankfully we were able to chunk yardage and get the points that we needed. We covered a Ferentz week one. we'll keep the countdown going to see, can I keep up with Iowa?
Was it 25 you need?
I needed 25. I got 34. I got an extra one just to play it safe.
Good. I was going to say, you should average at least 30, I would think, right, if your team is good. But you never know with high school.
Right.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up. We got football starting, college, and then like NFL. We're going to follow up with the draft. Like I said, if we end up doing a live fantasy draft, if you're interested in listening to that, we'll either put it up. I think I'll probably put it up as a podcast. I might have did that last year. I can't remember. But that'll be coming. And then the following week, we'll have some college football. Hopefully, no upsets on our side. But there are some teams that I would like to see lose. So let's see that happen. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.